07.
You are listening to Two Magicians, One Mic.
Hey everybody, it's Two Magicians, One Mic.
I'll go with that.
That'll be the new start. That'll be for the LA sessions. My name is Nick Paul.
And I'm Simon Coronel.
And we weren't going to keep doing these.
I like that I like that we said that this is now the LA sessions rather than the Macau sessions.
I'm not going to label them all the LA sessions because that's going to get redundant.
Yeah.
But we had, without exaggeration, we've had a few people come up to us, just strangers at the castle that we don't know, say, yeah, hey, we've listened to all the episodes. We really like them.
Yeah.
Are you doing more? And my immediate answer is no. But since
that might have changed due to popular demand,
and that I'm not doing 24 shows a week, I can now process things a little bit differently, I think, and have, hopefully we can have a slightly different perspective on things. And I think for these episodes we are going to focus on, at least try to, because we get kind of scatterbrained quite a bit, but we're going to try to focus on a single topic that's hopefully helpful if you're a performer or interested in the entertainment industry, or just want to hear two magicians ramble about stuff.
Yeah. And if you value our points of view, this is a place to get it.
Which, according to a couple...
Some people apparently do.
A couple downloads a week, a couple hundred downloads a week. You're like, oh, either they're really bored, have nothing else to listen to, or they value our opinion.
Yeah.
Either way, they're severely misguided, but I appreciate them listening nonetheless.
Either way.
So I'm thinking this week's episode, since we just finished Hollywood Fringe, you're a Fringe veteran, I'm kind of a Fringe veteran, I've done three now, we would talk about kind of producing your own solo show, whether that's in a Fringe festival, a theater festival of sorts, or just renting a theater and doing it.
So solo or group show, solo, duo, small ensemble, all of more. And honestly, actually, I recommend doing a duo or a group way more than doing a solo. It's
Which
way
is what
more
we
fun.
Just did.
Yeah.
Way more fun. You can screw up your schedule and miss a couple of the shows, and this show still goes on, so that's good.
Yeah. Well, depending on how integrated the show is, there are plenty of shows I've done where there's no way you could sub a new person in at the last minute.
What was smart about that show that we did, other than some of the cool, fun voting elements, real-time voting that the audience got to experience, nobody would... It wasn't a...
It was deliberately very modular in the structure.
Yeah, everybody got to do their own thing.
And that's a smart thing. Depending on the big thing for doing any kind of fringe festival, comedy festival, theater festival, magic festival, whatever show that I recommend is make sure you know why you're doing it. Don't go in just blindly going, oh, this is a great aspirational thing to do. Do it smartly. Do it because you know why you're doing it, because there are some things you're more likely to get out of it than others. For example, vast profits are not a thing that is likely to happen.
No.
At least not at first. There are ways that can happen, but that's a very niche situation that we can get to later.
Mm-hmm. So know why you want to get into it. I think have a purpose with your show. If you're just going out to do a straight-up magic show, that's fine. Just know that's what you're doing. Mm. For me, I had more success when it was a little bit more just magic show. The first time I did it at the Orlando Fringe. Mm. Last year, I tried to have a little bit of a thematic element, and it was okay. It kind of worked, but especially with a Fringe festival, you have such limited time to tech it. You have a tech person who is also doing like probably 20 to 30 other shows, so you have to keep your tech minimum.
So let's actually rewind, because I like to never assume any level of foreknowledge on the part of the audience.
Oh, especially, no, I mean, people go to Fringes and they don't know anything about
it. Yeah, exactly. So when we say a Fringe festival, Fringe festivals are events that happen now in many, if not most, big first world cities around the world. Back in, oh my God, I think it was the 40s, my dates are hazy, the Edinburgh Arts Festival, big festival, so a bunch of shows and events showcasing the arts, was a big event. Local Edinburgh performers, Edinburgh, Scotland, got pissed off that they weren't being invited to participate. They were just getting all these international big name out of town acts and so on. So they, as an act of partial rebellion, formed what they called the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, originally the Edinburgh Festival Fringe, but now Fringe Festival replaced that, and did their own festival. And the whole theme of it was, in exact contrast to the big arts festival, it was unjuried, as in there was no judgment process of who could participate. Anyone could bring any show of any type, as long as they could find a venue, they could be part of this festival. And if you're organizing your own venue and paying for it, as with most festivals, the question is, well, why be part of it? Why not just do your own thing at any time? And the reason is basically shared publicity. The festival as a whole makes a bigger splash, gets more attention than collectively than any one show you're doing would on its own. So you're basically piggybacking off the publicity of the whole thing. And then it's this great mutually supportive environment. Most festivals have all kinds of resources for producers doing their shows, people doing their shows, that can give you advice, give you feedback, give you input, give you publicity help, give you promotion help. Often there are better, cheaper deals with venues than you would get if you went fully independent and on your own. And often lots of fun events. There's usually some kind of fringe social hub that's a great place to hang out and meet other people, see other people's shows. Yay, all the reap all the benefits of that.
Sure.
So that's a fringe festival.
Yeah, and you've actually, I've never done Edinburgh. You did.
I did.
Which is ginormous. It's humongous.
Insane. So if you, before you die, dear listeners, go to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. It's one of those absolutely unique, unforgettable experiences. In the city of Edinburgh, every August, the festival runs for a month. As of last count, I think it was up to 2,500 different shows. And by show, I mean production. Each of those has probably 20 or 25 different shows. So it's something like, I forget the number, it's close to, I think, 100,000 individual ticketed performances you can go and attend. 2,500 different shows happening in a city. Edinburgh normally has a population of about 500,000, and it gets about 1 million visitors in the month of August each year. It's unbelievable. It's like literally, very nearly literally, every room in the city becomes a venue. Mm. Is either accommodation for performers, producers, and crew and everything, or as a venue. There are shows that happen in elevators. There are shows that happen on street corners. There are shows that happen in moving vehicles. There are shows, like, every, it's insane. It's the only festival in the world I know of where 3 p.m. is a really good time slot for a show, because a lot of people, again, 1 million people in that month, are there just to see shows. So they're coming over for a few days or a week or a long weekend or maybe the whole month if they're real junkies. And they're waking up at late in the morning and grabbing breakfast and then looking at the nearly inch-thick festival guide going, all right, it's 1 p.m. What are we doing? Let's see what's on nearby. Oh, there's a show just around the corner at 2 p.m. Great, let's go buy a ticket. And it's insane. It's just a city where the entire focus of the city for a month straight pretty much becomes anything goes performance art. And that's the whole point of a fringe. It's the fringes of human experience as well. Just any great things, terrible things, bizarre things, things you never would have even imagined could exist available
to
see.
I would say, if I was somebody listening to that, how do you stand out? How do you get people to come to your show? And, like, Hollywood's a smaller, it's a, you know, you find your own venue. Orlando Fringe and a lot of other fringes will supply venues, and they, you have a book of shows that you're listed in, so people can kind of look and see what's going on. But other than that, what have you found works for publicity? Because this year we had somebody just work in social media for us. And I don't know if that did anything. I think it did sell a fair amount of tickets.
Yeah.
Definitely just helped. Pumping out info and tweets and Facebooks and things like that.
Yeah, and the answer, how do you stand out? The answer is with great difficulty. It's the biggest challenge by miles. And that, this is the other thing, it depends hugely on the festival itself. So Hollywood Fringe, love it though I do, is by far the hardest one to pull a crowd at.
Sure.
That I've seen, by far. And that's because you look at the entertainment, the attention microeconomics of it, you know, entertainment rather than money. Los Angeles is a city that is very entertainment rich, and in the art scenes, very cash poor. So in any given night in LA, I forget the stats, something like there's well over 100 different performance things you can buy a ticket to every night of the year in LA.
Yeah.
That's insane. That's very unusual. And so something like a fringe festival doesn't really bring a lot to the city that it doesn't already have. It does have its benefits, obviously, particularly for the shows. Whereas you go somewhere like Perth, Western Australia, Perth Fringe being absolutely one of my favorites I've ever done. It's a city that is cash rich, entertainment starved. There's a lot less going on there. So when there's a fringe, it really makes a splash. Mm-hmm. A bigger percentage of the population here. Oh, there's this big thing going on right now. It's a real happening. versus Hollywood, where no one, even most people, don't even really notice.
Yeah, exactly.
And every Fringe is a bit different. Adelaide, I honestly wouldn't recommend doing it. Sorry, Adelaide Fringe, because it's oversaturated. It's hit the point where Adelaide's a small town, and there are way more shows, at least the recently when I did it, than audience members. And so it's very hard, unless you're one of the few big shows that really gets attention, the small operators just struggle for a mm-hmm. crowd. Edinburgh's an interesting piece, because even though, again, it's very, very saturated, you've got so many people who are there just to see shows.
Interesting.
And check it out.
So it's a different case.
Yeah. And Edinburgh also has this culture of the Royal Mile, which is this main pedestrian strip in the middle of town, where during Fringe, people are aware that that's a place to go to be flyered by people, to be given flyers and get ideas of what you might want to see. Yeah, because in Edinburgh, people are actually seeking it out.
So they're not just going to throw away your flyer.
Yeah, they're actually walking around going, let's see what's out there, because they know that's the place where the performers and producers go to fly their shows. So you'll actually have much more engagement on average. Some people don't care.
I have a friend who's doing a bunch of US and Canada fringes right now, and he tweeted out, dude just threw away my flyer right in front of me.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what happened.
And it is, yeah. Be ready for any Fringe. Get ready, have a thick skin, and be ready to work your ass off promoting it, because that is by far the biggest challenge.
I got lucky. I've never stood there and handed out flyers or anything like that. I've there in Hollywood and in Orlando, there were little showcases you could do, which I think helped. I don't know if it immediately sold ticket, but the biggest thing is kind of you want to draw a little bit of buzz. And I've learned a lot about marketing in that John, who directed my show last year, John Armstrong, did his own show this year and was a part of ours this year as well. He had a good suggestion of just get a space in the book, in the giant Fringe book, where all the shows are listed. And it doesn't even have to be a big poster or big advertisement, just something with face recognition so people see it. And that way, when they see your poster somewhere else and they see it in the book and then maybe they see it in another spot, they start to connect the dots. Mm. And I think it's just the repetition of seeing the same thing over and over.
There's that theory with all advertising, that it's that theory that three different impressions in different places. So you see it on a billboard, you read it, see it on the internet, and you get given a card. But then at that point, you start to go, oh, this is a thing. It sticks in your mind at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it varies. Again, Perth, for example, all promotional efforts I did were multiple. I got way more butts on seats for the amount of work I did promo-wise than I did in any other festival, which is one of the reasons I loved Perth. I got good crowds. It was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas somewhere like Hollywood, it's much harder. You'll get far less result from the amount of promo effort you do.
Yeah.
And, you know, Melbourne is somewhere in the middle. Edinburgh is its own unique beast.
Mm-hmm.
That's the other thing, is they have a lot of things in common, but every festival is totally different. Each one has its own dynamics and its own situations. Find people who have done it before and ask for their advice on it.
Sure. I've noticed that, too, especially with fringes, it feels like it's hard to get any sort of, like, if you want to get on the local news or any sort of TV time, it's much more of a challenge. They're less apt to put you on just because you're part of this festival and you're one piece of the puzzle.
Yeah.
As opposed to you doing your own show. I have a friend in San Antonio who's doing his own family show, The Magician's Agency. If you're in San Antonio, go check it out. He does a lot of morning news, like magic tricks on the morning news, and gets promotion that way. And I think he's able to book those, A, because he's calling them all the time and bugging them, saying, hey, can I come on the show? And B, that they don't have a lot of other magicians calling them and going, hey, can I do magic tricks on your morning news show?
Well, that's, again, like everything comes back to some form of microeconomics of supply and demand.
Yeah.
Is when there's low supply, demand is, it's harder to get attention because there's a lot available. There's a buyer's or seller's market.
Sure.
And during a Fringe festival, there's a lot more supply than average, which, again, has its benefits and its drawbacks.
Hollywood had the most shows it's ever had this year. What was it, 300?
Oh, it was insane. Well, the biggest thing that I noticed is for the first time this year, the Fringe program was perfect bound rather than staple bound. that's a sign right there that the program is getting too thick to just staple bind.
Well, I put this year's program in my library of stuff I've done, and I noticed this year's program was, I don't know, quarter of an inch thicker than last year. So there's a lot more going on.
Hollywood's a weird one because, again, it reflects the personality of the city. You've got a lot of people here doing trying to get discovered and get noticed. A lot more actors, a lot more theater going on in a Hollywood fringe. A lot more, yeah, theatrical things than most fringes are very... For example, Melbourne Fringe and most other ones, comedy is the biggest genre.
Yeah.
It's mostly stand-up comedy shows and then followed by everything else. But
I think in that subject, you should know where your show fits in because there are different categories you can put yourself in. And this year, like last year when I was like maybe one of three magic shows in the fringe, this year there was like seven or eight.
Yeah.
But half of them, for whatever reason, didn't put themselves in the variety section. Yeah. They put themselves in the one-man show section,
yeah,
which was a major mistake. You could tell because they weren't selling the tickets. Mm. John went to one of them, and he was the only person in the audience.
Yeah.
And I think if you were to... You just have to know where you fit in. It's like, sure, there's comedy in the show, but you're not a comedy show.
Yeah.
So we have, if you're doing magic, you have that distinct advantage of you have that variety section where yeah, it's much smaller and exactly, you're more likely
again,
to be
supply
seen.
Supply and demand, smaller, so you stand out more.
Yeah.
You get more percentage of the eyeballs. And that's also the biggest thing is how to stand out, how to get attention, having a good title. And by good title, I mean something that will appeal. Think about who your audience is going to be. Random punters, sure. But if it's people, what kind of people are going to see it? And think about appealing to them. Right, they're usually people who... That's the other mistake I think a lot of shows, particularly in Hollywood, make, is they're, without realizing it, just trying to appeal to their peers. They're trying to write clever titles and cool posters that are interesting and ironic and self-referential without going, no, you want, you know, mom and pop, who are the accountants with their kids, just looking for something fun to see. What are they going to try and see? Again, assuming it's family-friendly.
Yeah.
So, good title. Poster, most interesting thing is a human face, pair of human eyes. Make it have face focused is always more engaging. Good photo of, again, it depends on the show, right? This is for a relatively generic magic slash comedy type show, obviously, but if it's got a specific theatrical structure to it, then again, still try and get human faces are the most interesting things.
Yeah, that's very true. To. I found that out last year when I only put half of my face in the poster.
There you go.
And I had a bunch of people. I did pretty well in ticket sales for being essentially unknown. But I think it would have certainly helped more if people go, oh, I know that guy.
Yeah. And it also depends. Again, obviously, it's easiest to do a festival in your hometown because there's no travel. You already live yeah, there. Again, that's one of the reasons we're doing Hollywood Fringe. We live here. So
yeah, I don't think I would fly in for this particular one. I would probably fly in to do Orlando again. I think Toronto, I've heard good things about. I have some friends doing the San Diego one right now. Mm. I've heard good and bad things about that one, so not bad, yeah, but you know, just as compared to Hollywood yeah, in terms of people showing up.
Well, that's the other thing about the economics of it, is you want to consider what your travel and accommodation costs are, because in most festivals, again, a lot of festivals now, even fringe festivals, have a juried component of it, where you can apply for a quote-unquote festival managed venue or a hub venue that has no venue costs. And then the festival takes a split of your tickets.
Sure.
And some of them are more generous than others. I remember one of the years I did Perth, it was an amazing deal. It was no venue costs. And I think they only took about a 20% cut.
Mm.
So it was incredible. No venue costs, which is huge.
Yeah.
In Edinburgh, your venue costs are by far the biggest chunk of your entire budget.
Yeah.
And so in Edinburgh, your first something like, off the top of my head, 600 or 700 ticket sales are just going to breaking even on your venue rental.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've always got to look at the budgeting of it. Again, maybe you are lucky enough to be independently wealthy and just want to extend your artistic creative muscles, in which case, great, all this is less important to you. But for most people who I think would be listening to this thinking about it, they still need to think about the economics of it.
A good thing to watch is comedian Hannibal Buress filmed his month-long stint at Edinburgh last year or 2 years ago now. And it's a little bit of a misleader because he's in a decent-sized venue.
Yeah.
People are always showing up. He gets like front page press, you know, while being yeah, there. So he's not struggling yeah, with.
So you get a very. He's the 1% of Edinburgh
yeah,
Fringe.
Yeah, which to me make if you do have some name recognition, that would be a good time. Yeah. I would think to go to Edinburgh, but you do see him get to the point at the end of 30 days of just being so sick of his material,
yeah,
and just starts making up stuff and starts talking to people in the front row. But you do see the struggle as well, and you see just the whole process there. So that's if you're interested in Fringe, that's a yeah, great thing to check out on Netflix.
Well, and that's also a model of how you can actually start making money from these things. And the rule of thumb I heard is for any given festival, and this applies to things like Adelaide and Melbourne. Adelaide, I'm guessing less so now, but first year you'll lose money. Second year, come in with a newer, better, more kick-ass show, you'll break even roughly. And then the third year, once you've actually got a following, again, if you're doing your promotion and publicity right and getting your social media following built in that city, then you can actually start making money, because word of mouth lingers between years often in cities. People go, oh, I someone said last year this guy was good.
Interesting.
And then that can take a couple of years to build up. And that's actually the same of producing a show outside of a fringe festival.
Yeah, I've heard that too, where it takes at least 2 years to really just constant, consistent shows and working in the same space, and you get that word of mouth, and well, people remember it.
That was one of the big things that Steve Cohen told me. I met him. He wouldn't remember me. I met him years ago when I went to see a show in New York, 8-9 years ago. And he was very open about the fact that it took him solidly about 2 years doing the show every week to even begin to get audiences at all. And it was the first, he said something like, the first few months that exhausted all his family and friends. And after that, it was really slim pickings for a long time. And he also talked about the benefit of doing a show weekly versus monthly, because quote unquote, oh, it's every Friday, is a much easier, stickier thing to remember. The idea of stickiness in advertising, does it stick with you, stick in your head? Every Friday, quote unquote, is much stickier than second Monday of every month, because then people go, oh, which one, wait, which one's that? Is that this week? Is it next week? And suddenly you're losing people.
Yeah, and that's why shows challenge. Like Scott Neary's Booby Trap here in L.A. have managed to survive for 2 years.
Well, we're seeing that right now. Booby Trap's in a really interesting place because it's been about 2 years.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of starting to get regular good crowds.
Yeah, there was periods when I would do it and you're like, I don't know if anybody's going to show up. And now the past 3-4 times I've done it, there's always
solid
people
crowds,
there.
Yeah. Again, weekly and a couple of years.
And I think what might hurt them for a little bit now, they're changing locations to a better location to be in Hollywood, which is great, but I think that's going to confuse a lot of people at first.
Yeah.
So he's doing a whole marketing campaign. I've been editing videos for him to help him out with that. But it's been a good learning process for me too, just to go, okay, what happens when you have this consistent show on this specific day? And then both of their venues, the first one got sold and was demolished. So they're like, okay, we don't have a venue anymore. And they went over to Fado Do, which is, I don't even know the area of LA, but southern from where it was. And that place is going now. Very famous theater and rock venue that's been used in movies. And now they're going up to Hollywood. So you see him, who he's just, you know, in love with the show and in love with the idea of continually doing it.
And props to Scott, because it's a great example of just how damn hard you have to work to build something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so excited that I love Booby Trap's existence. Again, for those who don't know, Scott Neary's Booby Trap is a weekly variety show in LA, and it's based on the format that every act gets exactly 4 minutes, no more, or you get gonged off.
Although last time
fantastic.
I said,
"It's great, I love it."
I'm lucky. He knows me. I'm like, "Can I go a little bit longer?" He's like, "Yeah, it's fine." But
nice.
They'll gong you off, and it's just a matter of
time before something
picks
it up. It's a fantastic
it
night out. You never know exactly. You never know what you're going to see. I love the resurgence in variety entertainment over the past decade of that as a format. It still hasn't really gone mainstream, but it's out there.
That's kind of a good thing. But we are lucky to be living in that era. So going back to doing your own show, this is a good time to produce a show. But I think we should jump back to knowing why you want to produce a show, because you're not going to make money. If you make, like, the only time I've made money on my own show was Orlando Fringe. And once again, I was local. I think I put about 2 months worth of work into it, and my net was $500.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And this is the thing with this, with advice about that, is it's always so dependent on who you are and what your show is and how it works. Every now and then, again, the 1% will have lightning in a bottle and your show will be great and it'll sell well and word of mouth will spread. Don't rely on that. Don't anticipate that. Go in assuming that you're going to make that you'll make little to no money and no one will notice you or discover you, or you won't get picked up. A lot of people, I think, do Hollywood Fringe hoping to get noticed, to get spotted by talent scouts and so on. And that won't happen. 99% of the time. Yes, 1%, you'll be the chosen one, it'll happen. For you, I envy you greatly. The rest of you go in, and for me, the biggest benefit of Fringes has just been the stage time. It's been the flight time. That's where I've ground in most of my material and performance skills over the past decade, is because it's not easy to find places to suck. you know, depending if your city is rich in open mics. But there's a whole different thing you learn when doing a full-length show, which, again, fringes normally have a one-hour slot per show, which means your show is actually about 50 minutes because you want a lot of time to get in and get out of the room. And, yeah, actually writing, structuring, planning, performing a whole hour-long show has, over the years, been a huge learning experience. The first time, it's incredibly intimidating and terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's no big deal, which is a great feeling. And I've only got that from doing that many damn shows in that many damn fringes.
And there is something different to when people... Because I've gotten so used to being a part of a project, being part of a show with other people, but there's something different when people pay tickets to see you and only you.
Yeah.
And that's a whole nother added pressure that you don't really think about until the day of the show, going, oh, I guess I hope I don't suck because these people paid money. Even if it is $15-$20 to see you, that's
still
two people, three people, that's $60 they dropped to see your show.
Yeah, you have a sacred responsibility to them.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to maintain your karmic balance.
Yeah.
And give them something that was worth their time and their money.
So that's something to keep in mind too when you're producing your show, is make sure it's at least good enough for people to get a babysitter to, you know, take the night off, to spend the effort to come see you.
Mm.
John Mulaney's special, I think last year, he opens it with, thank you for coming to see this, because it's so easy today to do nothing, to sit on your couch and just watch Netflix.
Yeah.
Which is ironically what we were doing watching his show. But that's really the truth of it. There's even, I mean, live entertainment in LA is, you know, there's so much going on, but just in terms of content on your freaking TV, there's so much. So you have to have a reason, or give people a reason to come and see you. Yeah. Whether that's something grand or something minute, it doesn't matter, but there's got to be a reason for you doing that show.
Yeah. Again, yeah, as I mean, with everything, first, above all else, serve the audience. Give them something that is, think about them. Make sure you are serving them, giving them a good experience. And whether that good experience is being freaked out or laughing or being surprised or whatever that good experience is, make sure you are focused on them and what they're getting out of it.
And the nice thing about Fringe is that you have a lot of audience members that are coming and kind of get the deal. They've been to theater before, they understand. We had a couple random weird ones for our show that we just did, more so the late night shows and a couple of the weird timing shows. It was like, why are you here? How did you hear about this show? But, you know, they were fine. They were just not your typical Fringe audience member. So that's a little bit of a gift if doing something like Fringe. You have people coming to the show that get the deal, that understand it. But it's different when you're doing your own show at a theater and just producing it on your own, because that could be a total crapshoot in terms of what you get. What type of audience members show up.
Yeah, completely. And you learn from it. You learn, again, it's actually funny, a thing that is relevant to this that happened last night. A friend, Nicholas J. Johnson in Australia, persuaded me to finally put my Institute of Layman's Studies notes up online for sale. And it's basically about actually getting feedback from your audiences, really actually finding out what they are actually thinking about your show.
And how much is that, and where can people purchase
them? They are $15 online at simoncoronel.com/store.
See, we're going to make some money off
this. There you go. $15. It's actually not even linked from anywhere. You have to go directly to it. It's not public at all. You have to know the link. Because, again, it's for magicians only. It's aimed at magicians. It doesn't have mass market appeal.
Oh, I can take this out then.
Exactly. I think that's pretty much our target market for the podcast. But yeah, and it's an ability to actually really test your stuff in front of a much broader audience, not just people you know, your peers and so on. And that's where the rubber really hits the road. And you find out, is this actually good? Are people going to rave about it via word of mouth and tell their friends to come see it so your audiences improve over time? That's the other thing with Fringes, how long your run is. If you're just doing a 1 week run or a 2 week run, or somewhere like Edinburgh where a full month run is the norm, if you do a two-week run is often the norm. The first week will be quiet. The second week will get much better. Because, again, the festival builds more attention over time.
Mm.
And your show itself has then a chance to work with word of mouth. Word of mouth is always the most powerful marketing that exists. There's nothing better than that. And so doing everything you can sales-wise to try and get people into the first few shows, including many festivals have processes where the first few shows are always cheaper in a run. Which is, I think, a great idea. Melbourne Magic Festival, which I'm actually about to fly to Australia in 2 days to go and do, has this thing you can opt into where all Tuesday night shows are cheaper, which is a great idea. Normally the slowest selling night.
Now that they've made them cheaper, my Tuesday sales, I looked at them, are actually way better than any other night because people have got, oh, discount Tuesday. And that's great because Tuesday is my opening night.
Yeah.
I'm going to get a much bigger crowd on that night, which means I have a much better chance to impress them and then have them tell their friends about it for the Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and so on.
Yeah, I did that at Orlando Fringe where you can opt to do a free preview for your volunteers or anybody.
Great
and idea. That's, you're not making any money in that show, but that's a great time to invite press because that way you do a preview show. Usually it's a little bit in advance before your first show. And if it goes well, in my case, I got lucky. I got 2 good press reviews out of it. And then all the volunteers had good word of mouth. And yeah, you can't buy that type of buzz.
Yeah.
That's what you're going for. That's the way to do it.
And this is the biggest thing is, and this is so hard when you're mostly self-producing, if you're an independent performer and you're going to be self-producing. But again, for people who don't know, producing, being a producer means the person who puts the show on, finds the venue, organizes the venue, pays the venue, organizes the tech stuff, finds out, does the venue come with its own tech crew? Do you have to provide your own lighting and sound operator? What's involved in that? The publicity, the finances, just actually make everything apart from performing the show is the producing of it. Mm-hmm. Again, I remember not knowing that back when you first get into it. And it's having a great, step one, have a kick-ass show. That's really hard. That's a lifelong journey for most of us.
And you think that would be the only goal, but it's not. Yeah, that's kind of just the driver's license.
Now your work really begins because now you want to promote. People think about promoting and publicity, quote unquote. Forget publicity. Think of it as sales. Publicity and marketing are only good in as much as they drive your sales. You want to sell tickets. You are doing a sales function. And my advice, definitely is part of that, publicize it and promote it. But in places that will lead to people actually buying tickets and treat sales as an 8-hour-a-day full-time damn job. Because that's how you'll actually get a sold-out show. Again, unless you're the 1% lightning in a bottle where your show is so incredible that it just spreads virally through word of mouth. That does happen. It's very rare. It's never happened to me. I've had shows that have sold well, but it's because it was a good enough show to generate some word of mouth, but you still got to work your butt off to actually promote that.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think, what promotion tools do you think work other than what we already discussed?
Honestly, the biggest thing I've found that actually has an impact is sadly flyering. Like getting out there, hitting the pavement. And again, this is only at places like Edinburgh or Perth or Adelaide where there's a culture of the festival where the festival has like a, in all those places,
a lot of festivals will have like kind of a hub of this is Orlando, this is Fringe Central. Yeah. Orlando had that. Hollywood kind of has that, but nobody
but not really
shows up because the people only in there are performers.
They're not. Yeah. Basically, Adelaide, Edinburgh and Perth, again, sounds like Orlando. They all have big garden areas that are the festival gardens. And so the public knows, oh, this is a cool place to hang out and have drinks and get food. And also interact with performers. It's a good place to go before and after shows. That's where you go flyer. And you go out, you dress up. If you can wear your costume from the show, for me that was just my suit, so you stand out. Again, standing out. Walk to the people. Hey, how's it going? Say something hilarious. Connect with them as human beings. Give them a flyer. Give them a little pitch about the show. Be considerate. Be respectful. Don't be pushy. Let them know it exists. Repeat that for 8 goddamn hours a day. That was what we did in Edinburgh, and that was why we got actually decent sales for it. Same in Adelaide, same in Perth. Get out there. If, again, like in most things in life, it's unfairly weighted to naturally social, extroverted people. You'll do better if you actually enjoy interacting with people and are good at that.
Mm-hmm.
Get out there and promote your thing. Have a good flyer. Make it distinctive. Have a funny pitch. Have a funny line. I mean, I think one of the approaches I used at one point was, hi, do you want to see something goddamn amazing? And again, it's kind of it gets a laugh. It's a funny, unexpected line. But because you're well-dressed, you don't look like some random idiot.
Yeah, just some dude.
And that works quite well. And then they'd say whatever. I'd make a joke and respond to that, give them a flyer, thank them for their time, wish them a nice day, move on, repeat. That's the biggest thing I found works.
You know, I didn't think flyering works until I was helping my buddy with a show the other day. He came in town to do his Fringe, and I was helping him with just checking people in ticket sales, and a dude came up and gave me his flyer and gave me his little pitch, and it was the first time that I was like, oh, I should go see this show.
Yeah.
Now I didn't go see his show,
but you, yeah, exactly.
It played it. It stayed in my mind, and I kept his flyer, and I didn't go simply because I should have gone. I'm a terrible person for not going, but I was just, you know, exhausted from the whole festival.
And the big caveat on that, again, speaking of those places where there's a fringe hub, flyering, I've only found it works in a place where there is an environment where people are going there to be open to engage with other people. Again, big festival garden with drinks and food.
Yeah, because people know the routine. That's why they're there, is to see posters for show, grab a drink.
And see what's happening.
Here it's kind of just like one real street corner if you do Hollywood Fringe. And it's like, well, those people are just waiting in line to see a show
Hollywood
and they don't
Fringe,
want to be bugged.
I don't really think flyering works much. At least definitely not as well.
Yeah.
In line for a show, maybe. Because again, at that point, at least you're there. You're in line, you're waiting. You're more likely to appreciate someone actually.
Just a quick, hey guys, here's my flyer if you're interested in seeing another show. And you do have to play. But if you're, so taking this from a perspective of it not being fringe, how do you think that would work if there is no spot for you to flyer?
Then I would have no idea.
Yeah.
Then I would flounder. And I do. That's the thing. When there are festivals that I can't really fly well at, my sales have always struggled. And that's why, for me, the benefit of the festivals has not been I don't think I've ever lost money on a festival. I've always at least made some. But the ones I've done well were the ones where it was good for flyering and the ones where it was a good supply and demand ratio in terms of the city. So much of it's out of your hands. That's the other thing. So much of it's just damn luck. Right place, right time, right ratio of everything. Is the weather good will make a big difference to your sales, particularly at a festival.
Mm-hmm.
People are out there and connecting. And
yeah, it's very true. Yes, I guess so. If it's not a fringe-related thing, I would say any type of TV press or any type of...
Well, that gets into standard publicity, sales, marketing theory.
Yeah.
Just look up. We are not the best people to advise you on that.
I've been doing this for how many years, and I'm still trying to figure it all out.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm back in that boat.
Yeah, I deeply and profoundly envy people who are naturally good at that, because it's one of my biggest weaknesses in life, and that's why.
I think it's really hard when you are the product. Because
yeah.
I realized that when I was doing some editing work for Back to Scott Neri this week, like, he gave me a video. He's like, hey, can you edit this? And I did it right away. Like, I did it in a couple hours. And I'm like, man, if this was something I worked on, I would be overthinking it. I'd be like, well, this doesn't work, this kind of work. And I gave it to him. He's like, oh, this is great. This is amazing. But it was only because I was able to step away from my personality and my persona.
Well, that's actually another point about, shout out to Barbara Dillon, who was the publicist for our recent Hollywood Fringe show, who was fantastic.
Fan-based press.
Yeah. Because I have hired publicists in the past at festivals who have been, all of them have been absolutely shit. Not one of them was worth the money I paid, because most of them were lazy and ineffective. And that's one of the tricky things, is you can't know. I can see word of mouth, right? This is the important marketing. I can give Barbara a personal recommendation because I've seen her work. I couldn't do that with other festivals. I didn't know how to find a good publicist who will, again, work smart and work hard. Most of them will just, send you, write a press release and send it off to their contacts and not really give a shit. Because they don't care. They're just there. They've already made their fee out of you. They're not as invested.
It's true.
So if you can find a good publicist, ideally one you have some kind of personal connection to, because then they have skin in the game, who will actually care and work hard to promote your show, that's solid gold.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, it's easier to promote something that's not your own thing.
Yeah, I think it was very smart. It was John Armstrong's idea to go, hey, she's going to take all this, the lead on this. And it just makes life so much easier, too, of not having to think about, oh, I got to tweet this out, or I got to message people about this, or email. And I did it a little bit, but it was nice to have somebody else there so I could focus on the show. And I could focus on, I did some of the graphic design. So just those other aspects of the festival that just are so time consuming. Like, it's going, if you're thinking about doing something like this, just know that you have to, shit or get off the pot. You have to just put your whole all in. I mean, I'm talking to friends who have done festivals or are currently doing some festivals right now, but it does seem like they're half-assing it a little bit, where they're not doing those preview shows, or they're doing a short limited run, and you can't do that in a situation like this. I think, John was exhausted. He did, 10, 11 shows? Something crazy like this in this festival in a course of 3 weeks. But I know his ticket sales were pretty good because of that word of mouth and that momentum that he was building.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he didn't want to do 10 or 11 shows, but he could have done half that. And I know he was kind of done. He was like, I guess I could be done with this. But he wouldn't have sold those other tickets if it wasn't the case.
And that's the other thing, and this is a question that's on my mind right now for Melbourne Magic Festival, is deciding how much effort you are willing to put in and how much that matters to you. Because if you work really hard, you will get better ticket sales. If you don't work very hard, you won't. Now, the question is, for the amount of work you put in, how much will that increase your sales? And right now, honestly, for Melbourne, I'm accepting that I will have worse sales because I'm putting in less effort because I've got other things that are more important to me right now. I've just got so much crap going on in my life that I'm figuring out.
Yeah.
And also for me, I always realized I'd rather work on making the show good than work on making the show popular.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm thinking longer term. I care more. My priority for doing Fringes is increase my abilities to do good shows by doing shows and improving. That's my number one priority. Profit has always been, look, as long as I'm not losing money, I'd rather spend more time making the show better than have it well attended and mediocre.
Yeah, my goal last year was, and I tried to do it this year and failed miserably, but last year was, I need to write 5 new pieces. And hopefully out of those 5, 1 or maybe 2 is usable to throw into my actual show.
Yeah.
And that I got lucky. That was the case. And this year I tried to do that and just couldn't do it. It was just hitting a roadblock. Couldn't get anything new in.
Yeah. I'm in that place at the moment. I've just hit a roadblock on new stuff. I've just run out of ideas.
But, you know, I'm kind of embracing that.
Yeah.
Because I was really getting frustrated and really getting myself down about that. Just, God damn it, why can't I write anything new? Does that mean I'm just not creative? And does that mean I'm just at a point where I won't get better? When really, it's just I need to focus on other things. Yeah. And
it ebbs and flows.
And that's something I learned last year, too. I pulled out a couple pieces that I'd done 1,000 times, and I stopped doing them just because I'm like, I'm sick of this, time to move on. But you can't really do that until you're at a place where you're like a comedian who puts out his hour material, and then you have no choice but not to be able to use it anymore. We're in a different arena than that, where we kind of need our A-hitting material so we can kind of sneak in B and C material to try out stuff, if that makes sense. So just kind of know that I don't think you can force writing stuff. I think stuff just comes to you, and you have to jot it down and figure it out.
Oh, yeah, this is the other thing I'd remembered from earlier that was the biggest thing I learned from Edinburgh. One of the things about fringe festivals is they tend, because they're putting lots of shows in the venues, again, you're getting a much cheaper venue rental than you would normally get most of the time. But it also means the turnarounds between shows can be incredibly rapid.
15 minutes.
Well, it depends. So in
15 minutes is, here is
in
average.
In Hollywood,
it
was 15
It was kind of like that in Orlando, too. Sometimes you'll have a little bit more time before or after if there's not a show.
Yeah. Depend, exactly. Melbourne Magic Festival is very generous with a solid half hour.
Which is how it
amazing.
Should be. Yeah.
Well, you know, it depends on what you're prioritizing. Because then there's fewer shows in the venue. Venue makes less money, less motivation to be part of it. Again, microeconomics. But in Edinburgh, 7.5 minutes.
Wow.
There was a 15-minute gap between shows. That was most venues. 7.5 minutes we had to get in, get our show set up, and be ready to open the house.
And I can say this as somebody who made the mistake, keep your show simple. Keep it tech simple. I mean, I'm somebody who likes to go crazy with music and tech, but it just amplifies the stress if you have to focus on all the tiny details of things that could go wrong.
So the thing that we did, Viom, my friend and I, we did a duo show in Edinburgh. We spent, and it paid off, we spent as much time rehearsing our get in and get out as we did the actual routines and slights in the show. We actually made, this was the origin of the gig box, my obsession with the gig, this gig, idea of the gig box, the box you have for the gig. That was where I really made the first proper gig box, which was a box that was internally partitioned with our microphone, our equipment, literally everything we had to set up, because we had wireless microphones. We had to give that to the tech operator. And it was rehearsed. Boom, the receiver goes to the operator. Transmitter was already clipped on. Bam, this goes in this pocket, that goes there on the stage, this table goes there, these books go on that table. Set up our whole thing, pin this to the backdrop. Everything was in a partitioned box. So we could just walk in with the box. Bam, 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 bam. Set up the show, double check everything. Show starts. At the end, bam, 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 everything goes into the partition box. Get out.
Yeah.
7.5 minute turnaround.
And that's a great habit to get in just for any show. But yeah, if that's a great point you hit on, because I don't think anybody thinks about that short setup time. Especially
a
magic show.
Yeah.
You need to just focus. And for me, it's an OCD thing of I need to know where everything is and how everything's going to be set up. And that's where most of my stress before a show comes, is knowing how everything will happen. But yeah, that's a brilliant thing, habit to get put yourself into.
And obviously the ideal is when you actually have, when later on you have your own venue and your own set design and you can customize the whole thing. Sure, absolutely. That's not what a Fringe Festival
is for. Yeah.
That's a different beast.
And I've made that mistake. Like last year I was putting in video production and all these things, and sure, it makes the show bigger, but when you only have 15 minutes to load in,
and
your stress factor just goes way
up. And that's the
other
thing. You can make a great show by having all kinds of cool visuals and set pieces. You can also make an amazing show without that. And again, a Fringe is a much better place to work on creating an amazing show through a different avenue than crazy set pieces and things like that.
And I think if you can get your show really good without any of the bells and whistles, that means when you do add said bells and whistles, the show will be that much better.
Yeah.
Because the parts where you're doing video stuff and the parts where it's just you are going to be just as strong.
Yeah. Well, it's a personal taste thing. I've always been a fan of minimalism in performance art. I love shows that's just a person with a microphone and nothing else. I like that. I really get into that. And so I like doing it as well. One of the best shows I saw in Edinburgh was a show called Bane. B-A-N-E, and this was genius. This was a really smart idea. This guy, it was one performer and like one actor guy and one guitarist. And the guitarist did music. And it was basically a kind of a film noir detective story where the one guy acted all the characters. And again, that's something I've since seen other people do, but this was just done so well. Detective was Sergeant Bane, and he going, "Sergeant Bane, we need you," and then switching to the other character. "Okay, no problem," and so on. But it was really good. The story was gripping. It was well acted. The guitarist was good. It was just amazing. This captivating show, and it was one performer and one guy with a guitar. That's it. No set, no nothing, because it was the acting and the delivery that was the show. But the genius thing was he actually had three different shows: Bane Part 1, Bane Part 2, and Bane Part 3. It was basically a trilogy. It was the Bane trilogy. And it was like the Star Wars trilogy. The first one would stand, each one stands alone. But it meant if you liked it, I went back and saw Part 2 and Part 3.
That's genius.
So you can potentially triple your ticket sales. And that was a smart, smart idea.
I wonder how he books that, how that works out.
Yeah. And it was, I can't remember the way it worked on the ticketing sales. I think it was just sold as three different shows.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
No, that's right. Each night, like every Monday and Thursday was Bane 1. Tuesday and Friday was Bane 2. But again, you could see one without seeing the others.
It'd be funny if he started doing the wrong Bane show at the wrong time.
But, and I remember it because that was the word of mouth viral hit that year in Edinburgh.
Sure.
It didn't really have much publicity. It was just such a great show that people talked about it. And by the time I saw it, the room was packed. It was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So that can happen if your thing is great enough.
Yeah.
That makes all your efforts easier.
That's genius.
I think a lot of people try and worry about their publicity before their show is actually really good enough to publicize.
Yeah.
I can relate to that. I've been there.
Yeah, same. I did a two-man show in Orlando, and it just, luckily not many people came, but it was just not what we wanted it to be. And that was, it was tough because, and I got very lucky that at the time I was like, man, nobody came and saw it. But it's a good thing because it probably would have hurt the career more than helped it. Well, so just know when you're ready to do the show.
Yeah. And I honestly still don't feel ready. I still am not in any way happy with the shows I'm doing. And that sort of holds out because so far no show I've ever done has, again, except in Perth where it was easier, with the balance was tipped, no show I've ever done has really taken off hugely and been just packed out. It's happened a few times. I've done some sold-out shows, but they were always towards the end of a run. Word of mouth had a chance to build gradually.
I think
gradually.
For something like that, we're in an era now where you have, in and of itself, and you have Derek Brown and all these guys doing shows. Darren Brown doing shows in New York and all these...
Darren Del Gordio and Derek Brown, the New York...
So confusing. But you have money behind it, you have people producing it, you have people direct, guys like Frank Oz and Neil Patrick Harris attached to it, which amplifies the buzz and amplifies. So if you're thinking your Fringe show is going to immediately take you to that next level, I don't think that's always the case. But it's a good, or even just in general, doing your own show, it's a good way to figure out, okay, what can I take from this, what can I use from it? Do I want to push it to the next? Do I want to try to get investors on board?
And it's also, it can be great fun. That was when Viom and I did Edinburgh. Again, right now my primary motivation is usually stage time and improving my stuff, just working on material, working on making it better. But in Edinburgh, our primary motivation was just go and experience the Edinburgh Fringe. That was actually it. That was very clearly our primary objective, was go and experience Edinburgh, and we wanted to experience it from the inside rather than the outside. We wanted to be in it, doing it, and seeing what that was like. Secondary objective was do good show. Tertiary objective was make any money. And so, and we achieved that. We had some experiences. My God, the things we saw. And it wasn't all fun. Some of it was arduous, but at the same time, those are some amazing experiences. Like, we formed a bond going through that, fighting in the trenches of Edinburgh, that I will never forget. And it's sometimes tragedy makes the best stories and the best memories in hindsight, when you can, when enough times pass that you can laugh about it. And we still have jokes based on our Edinburgh experience. So yeah, and it can just be fun to be part of a fringe festival. Just doing a show, as long as you go in to enjoy it and not to go, if I don't make money, if I don't get if this doesn't take off, it's a failure. Go in and have fun with it is probably the best best reason to do one.
Yeah, I think that's some good advice to end on there. So we're going to be doing these, I think, monthly now. So please subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher or whatever podcast reading app. And probably around the first of the month, we'll release an episode now. I think that's how we're going to do it. We're going to either... I might go back to doing some interviews with some magicians I even talk to, people that I'm interested to hear things from, and also we'll try to focus on an individual topic. So if there's any topics that you would like to hear about, you can send us an email to twomagicians1mike@gmail.com or tweet at us, @thingsbysimon, @nickpaulmagic. And yeah, thanks for listening.
Let us know what topics you would find interesting, and or if you want to hear more of me rather than Nick just interviewing other people.
Exactly.
We can go either way. I don't mind. It's fine.
I prefer this way because I don't have to contact anybody. But
yeah, you just go, hey Simon, recording an episode. Yep, done. Good.
But because over. I have this little. It's fun to have. I used this device right when I got to LA just to reach out to guys that I was interested in, and I had some valid excuse to talk to them. Yeah. Hey, I have a podcast, you want to talk?
Yeah.
As opposed to, hey, you want to grab lunch? I'm a stranger, let's grab coffee.
That's really smart.
I am a sneaky man, but if you do want to hear anything, please reach out, and thank you for listening. Thank you, back by popular demand. So that's really good to hear. It's good to know that people want to hear stuff. And if you like the podcast, if you want to throw us a couple bucks here and there, our PayPal is twomagicians1mike@gmail.com. A couple bucks helps pay the servers and keep the service going, and advertisement and things like that. But yeah, thanks for listening.